Will you refuse corporate PAC money to fund your campaign?
Yes, I'm the only member of the Texas legislature who doesn't accept a dime of corporate PAC money, and I will be continuing that policy in the Senate campaign. It's not easy. As a state rep, I've literally had to send checks back to Walmart and Chevron and AT&T because I believe that many of those corporate PACs have way too much influence in our politics.
This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Yolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, welcome to Yolitics. Democrats are stoked.
They
That's
are.
What we're going to talk about in this episode.
I was just going to say, you saw something very unusual here in Texas this week that we don't see a lot of.
It's been a few years. We went down to Round Rock the other day for James Tallarico, State Rep. James Tallarico's kickoff party for his U.S. Senate campaign. More than 1,000 people were there. We got there. I thought we were going to be late. So it was a 6:30 event. We're rolling in hot at like 5, 5:15. I'm like, man, I just hope we can get a tripod in there. Nobody was there. I'm like, I look back, it's like, this is the right date, this is the right place. There were a few people around, like some Tallarico signs, said, okay, this is the right place. No other cameras were there, no other media was there, and this starts in 90 minutes. And man, people just started showing up and showing
up. Just materialized.
Up, started materializing. We're gonna talk about that.
Well,
in this episode
here. Before you, so give that some context though, because people are accustomed to these, you know, Trump rallies,
sure.
the presidential rallies that we saw in the campaign last year. Lots and lots of people. This came together fast.
It came together within 12 hours. More than 1,000 people showing up in 12 hours. Here, the context for this is, the last time I saw something like this at a campaign event, this many people, Beto O'Rourke, 2018, and then when he runs for governor in 2020, that was the last time, or he ran for president in 2020 and he ran for governor in 22. That was the last time I saw that many Democrats in one place.
And energy.
A lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. And Tallarico, if you've seen him, if you know him, he's a mild-mannered guy. Mm-hmm. Nice guy, but just very mild-mannered. He's not like you and
very
I.
Very thoughtful.
Not loud.
Yeah, thoughtful, we're not.
We can't quote scripture.
We can't. Yeah. We might, but we'll get it wrong.
Well, yeah, probably so. But he's everything we aren't.
Now, did you get us a special beer when you were down there in Round Rock covering this?
I was working, bro.
Okay, but at some point you left and we're not working anymore.
Well, yeah, we left at what, 1 a.m.
to
come back, and
okay, that's the excuse.
I don't want to start buying beer on I-35 as we roll back north here. But I do have in the Yolitics refrigerator, I have something for you here.
All right.
You have to read what it is, and then this is why it's for you.
Okay, this is called the Lee Harvey Oswald, double dry hopped with a juicy character and a velvety soft finish. Is that what you think of me as a juicy character and velvety soft finish?
Pretty much. And that's from, where is that, Oak Cliff Brewing Company?
And double hopped. You're double hopped.
Double hyped is what you are.
Yeah, this is from Oak Cliff Brewing Company. Lee Hazy Oswald. Yeah, I'm sorry, not the Lee Harvey.
I wasn't going to correct you. Since you always correct me, I wasn't going to even stop
that's
you.
That's how good I am. I correct myself.
I'm glad you saw that, and this is before you even had a sip of it. I have the Union Bear Mexican Style Lager.
This is good.
It is pretty good.
I don't usually like a real hoppy beer, but I do like that juicy character.
Look at this.
And that you know what this is?
Look at this.
Do you know what they call this?
This will be our last episode here in the newsroom.
Do you know what they call that?
What do they call it?
Karma in a can. Instant karma in a can is what that's called.
This corner will forever smell like Mexican style lager.
Is there anything left in the can?
There's about a third of it left, which will get me through the rest of this episode.
I wonder if that's because I shook it really hard right before we came on. All right. How's that foam? How's that foam tasting?
Well, our bosses will put the kibosh on this in the future.
Yeah, I think this is over. So back to the. You can step on that.
It's all over my hands.
Sorry.
So it's everywhere. We have some off-camera towels
We've
coming.
We've got towels coming in. We've got staff here at Yolitics.
That's the very important staff, Dia Wall from
who was
Senior
recently,
on TV.
Who was recently on with us very fine podcast.
So let's get into the Democratic excitement because, as I mentioned, we haven't seen this in a minute. Stomp that out.
Yeah.
We haven't seen this in a minute here in Texas. So Colin Allred had announced that he was going to run for U.S. Senate. He, of course, ran last year against Ted Cruz. Mm-hmm. Ted Cruz, the incumbent, defeated Colin Allred.
It wasn't very close.
It was, I think, 9 points.
Yeah, it wasn't very close.
And then so Allred says, listen, I think that I can run again and defeat John Cornyn, or whoever wins the Republican nomination. Kent Paxton, John Cornyn are the two running in that very heated race over there. So the question was, well, you know, James Tallarico has been running around the state. He's been attracting big audiences of Democrats in different parts of Texas, and people are showing up for him.
And he has the attention of the Allred campaign, too.
He does have that.
Because there was this poll that came out, what was it? I don't know if it came out. It was done, and then it was sort of leaked out. But it wasn't that long ago, and Tallarico has not run for statewide office, so he doesn't have near the same name recognition as Colin Allred. And they were separated by, what, seven points? Allred was ahead in that? And then they went further in that poll, and they asked the question. They basically told people they were polling, well, let me give you a quick background on both of these candidates, and then you tell us what you think. And when they did that, Tallarico took a two-point lead over Allred in that poll. Now, that's one poll, one sampling of people,
Snapshot, very early on.
So, you know, all of that can change. But I could see how the Allred campaign is taking that seriously. I think that on the Republican side, they take this seriously as well.
Yeah, and they are. You know, we've already seen statements come out from John Cornyn on this almost immediately after James Tallarico announced at 5 a.m. On Monday, or was it Tuesday? Whenever he announced
Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah, 5 a.m. Tuesday, within like at like 5:10 a.m. is when Colin Allred came out with his own statement and said, listen, I take nothing for granted. I'm going to run the campaign that I think Texans want from me. And that's what he's doing right now. But we don't usually see Democrats challenge each other like we're seeing now for the Democratic nomination for any seat, but especially for U.S. Senate. That shows how much attention is on this. In addition, Tallarico was on the Joe Rogan Experience, a podcast about as well known as Yolitics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, almost. I'm not sure how many followers they have now or how many views they get.
I think they have a couple people that listen to them. We need to get them on Yolitics.
Well, you know, and Vice President Harris was slammed by a lot of people for not going on the Joe Rogan
for
podcast.
For a national, for presidential
They thought that maybe she would have really helped herself by going on there and reaching an audience that might not have been hearing from her or was hearing things that might have distorted her record, and she didn't do that. He's been on there, and he actually was, he impressed Rogan.
He got an endorsement from Rogan. Joe Rogan tells James Tallarico recently, wow, you need to run for president. We need something like, we need more nice guys in office. And if you know Tallarico at all, he is that guy. You know, he's super nice guy.
Unusual political animal. We don't usually see a lot of that, and we certainly don't see a lot. I mean, we've heard of, you know, Christian conservatives. Unusual to see a Christian, somebody identifying as a Christian liberal.
Yeah. How will that play in Texas? Christian conservative against a Christian liberal, whoever the GOP nominee is. So we were down there watching Tallarico kick off his campaign, this huge audience he had. And we're trying to say, hey, you know, is there an opportunity to sit down and talk to him before right after this? And they said, well, let's do it just before. That way we can, you know, you can have some time with him. You can ask him the questions you want to ask him. And we did. So just before he kicked off his campaign, we got him on the line from Round Rock there, from his hometown of Round Rock. Mm-hmm. And we had a number of questions for him about where he sees a path to victory. Here's what he told us. Representative Tallarico, congratulations on your candidacy. Let's start with the basics here. There's already a high-profile Democrat in this race. Texas remains a solid red state here. Where do you see a path to victory?
Well, you know, I first got elected to the state house by flipping a district that no one thought was winnable. I was an underdog in that race, and I'm an underdog in this race, both in the primary and the general. And honestly, I love being the underdog because it means there's an opportunity to try different things and to break outside the mold and to speak truth to power, both in my party and when it comes to the other party. And so I'm looking forward to running this underdog campaign. And my life has shown me, whether it was as a middle school teacher on the west side of San Antonio or as the son of a single mom, you should always bet on the underdogs. And so that's the kind of ethos that I'm bringing to this campaign.
You first have to win the Democratic primary, and you'll be up against former Congressman Colin Allred. You haven't focused on him in the early hours of your race. You're talking more about billionaires, but what should voters expect? Is this going to be a dirty campaign between you two?
No, I don't think so. I'm committed to running a positive campaign about my vision for the future, my values, and how we can change this corrupt political system that's hurting all of us, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. And I like Colin Allred a whole lot. I know you're probably not supposed to start political campaigns by saying you like your opponent, but I do. I respect Congressman Allred tremendously, and I think he would be a great U.S. senator and certainly much better than Ken Paxton or John Cornyn. So I'm not interested in tearing down my fellow Democrats. I'm interested in putting a case forward to the people of this state and sharing my experiences, my skills, my values, my vision, and why I think I would be best as the senator from Texas.
You immediately attacked billionaires' influence in politics, which is really outsized. Are you running as a progressive alternative to Allred, or where would you say you line up?
You know, I started my launch video by saying that I no longer see politics as left versus right. I see it as top versus bottom. I think a lot of the billionaires who control our government, who control our media, who control our economy, they have a vested interest in keeping us all divided. They do it regularly with their social media algorithms that they control. They do it on the cable news networks that they control. They divide us by party, by race, by gender, by religion, to keep us from realizing that they are defunding our schools, gutting our healthcare, and cutting taxes for themselves while they raise taxes on working people in this state. And so we've got to resist the divisions that have been placed upon us by the people at the top. We've got to come together, realize that there is far more that unites us than divides us, and take power back for working people in this state.
Considering your criticism of billionaires in politics, will you refuse corporate PAC money to fund your campaign?
Yes. I'm the only member of the Texas legislature who doesn't accept a dime of corporate PAC money, and I will be continuing that policy in the Senate campaign. It's not easy. You know, as a state rep, I've literally had to send checks back to Walmart and Chevron and AT&T because I believe that many of those corporate PACs have way too much influence in our politics. Not that I won't sit down with them, not that I won't listen to something they have to say, because business has obviously a role to play in our community, and I'm a pro-business candidate, but they have way too much influence in our politics. They deserve a seat at the table, but they don't deserve every seat at the table. And so it's why I've put that ban in place in my office. It's why I put this ban in place in my Senate campaign. But that also means that I'm going to have to rely on the people to fund this effort. And I hope that people across the state, regardless of their political affiliations, will join this campaign, be a part of this movement to take power back for the people of Texas.
Representative Tallarico, of course, exciting early on the Democratic base here, mm-hmm. at least some of the Democratic base, and Colin Allred's campaign, no doubt taking this very seriously, because they'll have to campaign against him at some point, even though you just heard Tallarico say there a moment ago, listen, my campaign is not against Colin Allred. My campaign mm-hmm. is against the billionaires with outsized influence in this state. He says we're not after, you know, left versus right in this campaign. It's top versus bottom. Interesting, he's attacking the billionaires.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting as well, because, you know, Donald Trump, President Trump, did very well here in Texas, and you notice right off the top, he's not taking it to the president.
That's what Democrats usually do, is attack Trump. That hasn't worked for them.
He's doing the top versus the bottom instead of the left versus the right, you know, and right. I thought that was an interesting tack to take there. And the other thing that I'm curious about, and that I'm going to be watching in this, you know, you mentioned off the top here how, you know, in past races, we haven't seen really, you know, hard-hitting campaigns between two Democrats vying for the party's nomination. You know, we did see, you know, a primary in the last Senate election, but it didn't seem like it was as hard-fought. This one looks like it might be that. And the curiosity for me is, does that make a difference in the candidate that is produced as the winner in that primary? Will it make for a stronger Democratic candidate? Because Democrats haven't won here in decades,
right.
in statewide. I'm curious to see, does that create a more polished, stronger Democrat ready to take on whoever, you know, comes forward from the Republican side? Because we just haven't seen that dynamic a lot.
Yeah, a buddy of mine, Manny Garcia, who is a Democratic consultant, has been around for a long time. I asked him that question too. I mean, is this good to have these guys go at it against each other to burn money in a primary as opposed to saving that? And he said, listen, this will get the base excited, essentially, and give them a reason to show up and vote in the primary. We'll see what happens with the general election. But another guy we go to all the time is Matt Engel. He is a Democratic consultant, longtime Politico here in Texas, worked for Democrats here in the state. He runs the Lone Star Project. He has offices in Arlington and Washington, D.C. And I called him a little earlier and said, listen, I'd love to pick your brain on this. He said, I'll be on a plane landing in Washington. Let's do it at this time.
Yeah, what time do you get there?
Fine. We'll do it at that time. But we called him as soon as he landed in D.C. and got to his office there. And we had a lot of questions about the Tallarico race. Hey, Matt, thanks for being here. Let's start off with what you make of James Tallarico's announcement. Because, you know, honestly, when I was down there in Round Rock the other day, I have not seen a group of Democrats like that. And in a minute, since, you know, Beto's runs, I guess, it's been a minute. So is he bringing energy and can he sustain that?
He is. He is bringing energy to it. I think he's engaging some people who may or may not be new to Democratic politics, but they're newly excited by them. And I think that's all positive. I mean, there's nothing negative about anything about his rollout. There's a little bit of disappointment for people like me because you'd like to see our best candidates not in the same race. You know, you've got both Colin Allred and James Tallarico running for the U.S. Senate. Both of them are excellent. Both of them have a chance to win in the fall. I'd like for them both to be on the ballot in the fall.
Let me ask you that, because I asked some people down there what they thought about it, too. And in years past, you know, I understand that Democrats have kind of talked to each other, you know, off camera, behind the scenes, and said, hey, I might run for this. Who's the best person to go? Okay, well, you go, and then I'll look at another seat. That's happened in the past. And number one, why didn't it happen here? Number two, though, by having a competitive primary, I mean, doesn't that bring some excitement to this?
It may, but people are romanticizing the past a little bit there, Jason. In the past, Democrats have been talking to each other about who in the world can we get to run in this race?
Okay.
This is a circumstance in which we have two excellent candidates and you have a highly vulnerable Republican. And so anybody looking at the ballot next fall, they see Ken Paxton as the likely Republican nominee for the Senate and the most likely Republican to lose. And so good candidates that are ambitious, that's where they're going to look. But there will be excitement in this primary. Again, you've got two candidates, so both do an excellent job. And I think that we as Democrats need to make the most of that and make sure that that energy follows us into the fall.
Matt, is there any chance in your mind that one of these two candidates, though, doesn't make it to the primary, that by the time we get to the filing deadline, one of them is out of the running or maybe pursuing a different race?
Well, anything can happen, but I doubt that. I think they're both in this Senate race. I think you're going to see some other good candidates run in some of these other seats. I think that's going to settle out a little bit now over the next few weeks. So I expect that these two will be on the ballot for the Democratic primary Senate nominee in the spring.
And are we looking at the whole field here, or have you heard any, you know, murmurs out there that we could still see another candidate on the Democratic side getting into this Senate race?
You could see somebody non-serious get in, but I don't think that you'll see anybody seriously new in this Senate race at this point. I may be wrong, but that's my sense.
So Colin Allred and James Tallarico both got into politics, both won their offices in 2018. But they're kind of different Democrats, like you'd expect, and, you know, a big tent party. Allred, you know, serving in Congress, really working across the aisle, not to say that Tallarico doesn't do that or hasn't done that. He has, of course, passed bills down there, but he seems a lot more progressive than Allred. How does that shake out?
Well, I think that is the challenge for James, is to be able to demonstrate that he can create a coalition from the middle out and that he can perform well in a highly competitive race in which you've got to build a coalition to win. He did win a competitive race in 2018, but it was a state house race, and it was a little bit better district than the district that Colin captured in 2018. And then Colin turned around and got reelected also in that district when the Republicans spent millions of dollars against him. So if you're talking about who has run and won very competitive races that are more like what you have to do statewide in Texas, that would be Colin. But that doesn't mean that James can't do it, and that doesn't mean that he's not bringing some energy and some excitement to the race that's important.
Okay, so he had this big rollout, a lot of energy in that this week. You did put out a message this week, Matt, that said that you were surprised by the soft tone, though, and the pastoral setting for this campaign launch. Can you talk a little bit more about that and where you think Democrats need to focus in this state if they have any hopes of taking a statewide office for the first time in more than 30 years?
Well, the first thing you have to do is get nominated. And the Democratic primary vote in Texas comes to disproportionately from the big urban areas and from the border. And it is very diverse. You know, about a quarter of the vote's going to be African Americans. And so it was interesting. It's an interesting approach to launch your campaign in kind of a rural setting with a mostly white crowd. But that doesn't mean that James won't be reaching out, and he's going to have to become better known in Dallas-Fort Worth and in the Houston area. Austin is the center place. It is the epicenter for activism in Texas, but it's not necessarily the place where the most Democratic votes are.
That's a good point. Would you characterize Tallarico as more of an activist Democrat?
I don't know if I'd say activist Democrat. I think he's been a very constructive member of the legislature.
Yeah.
And he's a very serious person. I think he brings a real freshness with his approach to faith. But he is in a part of the state, and his district's in a part of the state where you have a lot of Democratic activism. And so I think it's important not to necessarily characterize him as sure. being the same ideology, but everybody who's standing up and cheering him right now.
But obviously, for people who've seen Tallarico or know who James Tallarico is, state representative, he's a mild-mannered, thoughtful guy. You know, went to UT Austin, went to Harvard, studied in the seminary as well. He can comfortably quote scripture, as we know here. But then one of his opening mottos was, you know, let's flip the tables. You know, I get where he's trying to go with it. It's not really like him, though. Do Democrats need to be a little bit more edgy like Gavin Newsom is out in California, kind of taking a page out of the Trump playbook? Or do you think that the Tallarico message, and even Colin Allred, too, is, you know, a quiet, mild-mannered guy, can that win?
Well, I think what's important is for Democrats to convey toughness and convey independent nature in order to defend Texans. And I think that stands as a real contrast with Republicans now. I mean, Republican office holders from Paxton through Abbott all the way down, they don't advocate for Texas anymore. They just advocate for national Republicans and for Trump and for billionaires. And Paxton's in a circumstance where, you know, for goodness sake, his wife's identified him as a creep and his closest employees have identified him as a crook. So I think that both Colin and James contrast very well with the way Republicans are presenting themselves as national Trump Republicans and who have turned their back on Texans.
So, Matt, just right off the bat, since Colin Allred has run for statewide office before, he, of course, has more name recognition right off the top here than James Tallarico does. So Tallarico comes into this, the underdog, it's fair to say. But we saw a fairly lengthy and specific statement that came from Senator Cornyn, who holds the seat right now, you know, calling him a radical left-wing Democrat, saying that he's an opportunist, a carpetbagger, and that he's not for Texans, he's for abortion on demand, et cetera, et cetera. It went on and on. I thought it was interesting, such a long statement from a sitting senator who has his own very difficult primary to deal with. Does that give you any indication that he considers Tallarico to be a legitimate threat here?
Well, he should consider him a legitimate threat, but that's not the reason he did that. He wanted to put out a statement with a lot of adjectives so that he looked like he could make a fist. John Cornyn's not a serious candidate, in my view, at this point. I know the polling looks like it's gotten closer, but I think he's a dead senator walking. That short of some new huge scandal around Paxton, I think Paxton's going to be their nominee. He's going to be a real anchor around the neck of all Republicans running.
Do Democrats need Paxton to win that primary next year to really have a shot of pulling off this Senate race, Matt?
Oh, no, I don't think we need him to, because I think John Cornyn's also damaged himself in such a dramatic way, even if something lightning did strike and he did become the nominee, I think we'd still have a chance to beat him. But for goodness sake, Ken Paxton should be disqualified as a candidate. For the Republicans to choose him as their nominee will tell us all we need to know about the lack of morality and lack of principle in that party.
You know, one thing Tallarico has is a massive social media following, 1.2 million followers on TikTok, another 1.2 million on Instagram here. I looked at Ken Paxton's, John Cornyn's, Colin Allred's, and still, even if you add all those guys up, you know, it's still 8 or 10 times more is how many Tallarico has. I would think that he could leverage that to try to get the hardest, you know, folks to come out and vote, which are the younger people. And, you know, Beto O'Rourke did that in 2018. How important is that in his toolbox?
Well, it's important mostly to fundraising in order to kind of keep your name out there in the social media. It's unclear as to how important that will be to votes. I mean, influencers and TikTokers in the West Coast and the East Coast, they don't vote in Texas elections. And so I'm not sure how many of those people are in Texas, but it's better to have them than not. It certainly gives you a chance to raise money and to raise your profile quickly and get your message out quickly. And so I'm not critical of it. I just think it's easy to oversimplify those followers into voters, and that's not always the case.
Oh. Matt, can you tell us what you're going to be looking for in these two big name candidates, Colin Allred and James Tallarico? What are you looking for as we go through these next several weeks, next several months, for them to be able to, you know, one of them be able to pull ahead of the other? And what would you, if you were advising them, tell them that you really don't want to see?
Well, kind of this last question first. They shouldn't go after each other. They shouldn't kind of fall into negative criticism of each other. There'll be some supporters that'll do that because that's inevitable, but they shouldn't do that. That's not good for them. That's not good for anybody. In terms of the jobs that they have ahead, with James Tallarico, he's got to become better known, particularly in Dallas-Fort Worth and in the Houston area, particularly among minority voters. His campaign can't be too white and it can't be too soft. With Colin needs to continue to kind of make step up his tougher rhetoric, create more contrast with himself and with Paxton and Cornyn both at this time. And I think also Colin's got to really focus on making sure that he continues to raise money so that he's got not only with the resources that he needs in the primary, but also that he's got resources to need that he'll need going into the fall.
And last question I have here too, Matt, is, you know, zooming out and looking at this, listeners, whether they're Republican, Democrat, or even independent who lean conservative in this state might say, listen, we've talked about this a lot over the years. We've talked about this in 2018 with Beto O'Rourke too. It just, Democrats have not won a U.S. Senate seat in Texas since Lloyd Benson in 1988. Are Democrats maybe getting ahead of themselves here with all this energy?
Well, one of the things that frustrates me is people look back and say, well, gosh, Democrats didn't win, so that means they didn't have a chance. We had a chance in all of those races. And in some cases, it wasn't quite a good enough year. In some cases, there are other things in terms of a candidate weakness or a flaw that didn't get us there. We've got a chance in this election cycle. It's harder for Democrats. It's harder to build our coalition in a state like Texas than it is for the Republicans. Just line up a bunch of white people and vote them. But I believe that we have an excellent opportunity here. Now, the real challenge for us is to make sure that our candidates stay strong, that they're funded, and that we run good, strong, technically sound campaigns against very good campaigners. Greg Abbott is a very good campaigner.
Sure.
Ken Paxton didn't get elected by accident. And so you can't assume that they're just going to give their seats up.
Matt, I'll close out with this. You deal with so many people, you probably speak with donors, strategists, voters out there. What are you hearing in these days since the Tallarico announcement, number one? And number two, just in general, about the upcoming midterms, what are you hearing from Democrats in Texas?
Well, there is, to a greater degree than I've seen in a long time, there is a willingness to associate their dissatisfaction with Washington, with what's happening in Texas. I think that particularly the redistricting gambit that Abbott pulled, I think that really crystallized for a lot of not just Democratic voters, but other voters, that this is just an extraordinary effort to just do the bidding of Trump and billionaires and not look out for Texans. We've got a real challenge to capitalize on that. But there is more disappointment and dissatisfaction with Texas Republicans than I've seen in a long time.
So is there enthusiasm in there for Democrats?
Well, there is. But you know, I will tell you that a lot of times in order for people to get very enthused, they need to know that it's important to beat somebody. And so there, one of the problems that Democrats have had a lot of times is they liked our candidates, but they weren't ready to fire the Republicans. I've seen Texans more ready to fire Republicans than I have seen in a long time.
Matt, I always appreciate the insight. I mean, you take us into the weeds, and that's where we need to go to better understand this stuff. So always love that. Thanks so much for the time.
All right. Thank you all.
Appreciate it, Matt. Thank you.
Matt.